540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News. I'm Ed Donahue. At the White House today for meetings with President Biden is French President Emmanuel Macron.
I'm extremely happy and honored to be here for the first state visit of your administration. And this is, for me, the best evidence of this indeed very long-term friendship and partnership.
The two leaders are talking through the war in Ukraine, concerns about China's increasing assertiveness in the Indo-Pacific, and European worries over aspects of President Biden's signature climate law.
Things are changing rapidly, really rapidly. And it's really important we stay in close communication. It doesn't mean that every single solitary thing we agree on, but it does mean we agree on almost everything.
The president will be hosting his first state dinner tonight at the White House. Police in Spain detonated a suspicious parcel discovered at the U.S. Embassy in Madrid a day after a similar package sent to the Ukrainian embassy ignited upon opening and injured an employee. A black charity boss who was repeatedly asked where she really came from by an honorary member of the UK's royal household said she believed institutional racism is a problem all over the UK. Ngozi Fulani detailed the conversation she had with Lady Susan Hussey at a Buckingham Palace reception.
If you ask me a question and I give you the answer, then that's that. Move on to the next question. But if I give you that answer several times and you won't accept it, then let's recognize that there's a problem here.
The exchange led to the resignation of the 83-year-old Hussey as an honorary member of the royal family. Multiple injuries were reported when a school bus crashed into a house and another vehicle in a suburb north of New York City. A group of prosecutors is asking a judge to toss out Democratic Attorney General Josh Call's lawsuit challenging Wisconsin's 173-year-old ban on abortions, arguing it lacks legal merit and there is no weight to assertions it is unenforceable because of its age. This is AP News.
Hi, this is Joe Cordell with the law firm Cordell & Cordell. Divorce can be complicated, especially if children are involved. If you're a father and want to protect your role in your children's lives, remember Cordell & Cordell. We've helped men with matters like these for 30 years, and we'd love to help you.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's Atlanta area attorneys. 404-793-0000. Online at CordellCordell.com. 1 Glen Lake Parkway Northeast, Suite 975, Atlanta, Georgia, 30328.
We tried Dynavite Nutritional Supplement, and after a couple of weeks, we noticed a big difference. Our little Gizmo's coat was shinier, and there was a lot less scratching and shedding.
My dog smelled and scratched constantly. We bathed and sprayed her, took her to the vet, but no results. Now, a little Dynavite in her food helps Bella keep her beautiful coat with no scratching or smell.
Happier, healthier with every bite. Over a million pets helped with Dynavite.
The Devil's Advocates.
Aaron Mostovsky, who rioted at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, was dressed as Captain Caveman. QAnon shaman meets Law and Order?
Right. I mean, he pulled it off a whole lot better than Aaron Mostovsky.
Well, let me read a quote from the judge in this case. I hope you'll leave some of this fantasy world behind. Mostovsky was sentenced to 8 months in prison.
Looking at the guy, he might be one who loses his mattress on the first day. Breaking news.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio, VO5.
Let's do it on the dance floor. Let's do it while we can. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha. Live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. The January 6th committee is now ready to get to work on its final report after hearing from Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss yesterday. Voss's meeting with the committee was the last scheduled deposition in the committee's investigation. In a statement, Voss says he answered the committee's questions about the 2020 election and maintains he was not involved in the attack on the Capitol in 2021. Darryl Brooks Jr. is appealing his convictions for killing six people and wounding dozens of others at the Waukesha Christmas Parade last year. Brooks represented himself at his trial, but now he's asking for help from the Public Defender's Office. Waukesha's Christmas Parade is scheduled to return Sunday for the first time since the attack. In sports, the Bucks beat the Knicks last night 109-103. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Okay, kids, the basement is all yours.
Lights on, shirts on, and no dancing.
No dancing. You're like the guy from Footloose. No dancing, you guys.
They go in my room. My foot goes in their ass.
You sweet man.
I think we should just say,
whoa. Get out.
See you soon.
Get out.
Don't be a stranger.
Get out.
Extra icy.
That was mine.
We never locked the sliding door.
We do now.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Yes, yes, yes. That is the new trailer that just dropped this week for That 90s Show, which is the sequel series that's going to be 10 episodes on Netflix. So it is not the same setup, let's say, as That 70s Show was. I think, how many years did that show run? That was a great show.
And spawned the careers of a whole, I mean, Ashton Kutcher and Mila
Kunis.
Yes, and just many, many others. Danny Masterson. Also.
Well, he's it's funny because I was reading more about this, and almost all these, the people who, so you could probably hear, if you were a fan of this show, Red and Kitty, and actually the actor who plays Red, Foreman, is from Wisconsin.
Oh, is he really?
He is, yeah. I have to try to look up his name. Kurtwood Smith. And I forgot which city from Wisconsin he's from, but he's actually from here. And then Deborah Jo Rupp plays Kitty. How could you ever forget that voice? So the premise of the show is it's still Red and Kitty's house.
Somewhere
in Wisconsin. I forgot what the name of the... Brooke, do you remember the name of the made-up... It's a made-up... I think it's supposed to be in, like, southeast Wisconsin in the 70s. So now this is in the 90s. They're now grandparents. And this is Donna and Eric's daughter, who's coming to stay with her grandparents for the summer. And as she gets to town, Point Place, she now makes new friends that are her age that also live in Point Place. And they have redone the basement. In reading more about this, it's basically if this goes well and is Netflix... renews it for another season, it'll be the next summer. Because the guy who is the showrunner for That 90s Show was a writer for That 70s Show, and he said that they found that the most interesting things were not usually when the kids, even though all these actors were definitely in their 20s, were at school. And so that's why they're going to focus it being on the summer and letting the next summer pass. But I want to know, for the audience... Especially if you were a teenager in Wisconsin in the 90s. I guess my brother would fall into that. I wonder if he's listening right now. 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. What would the show have to get right to make it feel uniquely Wisconsin in the 90s?
So something cultural.
Cultural, yeah. Because did you watch the show? Did you watch That 70s Show?
No.
You were a teenager in the 70s.
I was a teenager in the 70s, but by the time that show came out, I was in my 20s, I was in my 30s. I mean, in the 90s, and I was in my 30s.
Yes. But I'm sorry. I'm curious of how. You know, you think about there was Happy Days, which obviously was the 50s, mm-hmm. and that was Milwaukee,
Yep.
Milwaukee suburbs. Point Place, 70s Wisconsin. And now this will be 90s Wisconsin. And obviously there are certain cultural things that were happening across the country that are, will be referenced. But it's like, what would have to be specific to, like, for those of us who live in Wisconsin, especially those who were teenagers in Wisconsin, to be like, oh, yeah, they really nailed it.
Was that, like, the jellies era?
I had some jellies. I for sure, those, they were, I think back at those, I don't know how those were ever popular because they were so uncomfortable. There was, like, zero support. And they, like, cut your feet because it was such hard plastic that I remember, like, as you cut up your feet, is that, like, because you didn't wear these shoes in. They wore into you. And, like, I literally remember having, like, the blisters, those things.
Seriously.
It wasn't even blisters because it wasn't rubbing. It was just, like, hard plastic slicing your skin. And yet we all had them.
And what about the, weren't bracelets a real big thing?
Friendship one thing I certainly know, and this something? Might be getting more into early 2000s, but there was a lot of white kids who just wore puka shells. It's a lot of white kids in the Midwest that I certainly have pictures of me wearing them. Like a lot of hemp necklaces, randomly. That's certainly, I don't know if that was 90s versus 2000s. Because like I my freshman year of high school was 2000. And so being a teenager in the 90s, I just kind of missed that. So sometimes the trendy things that I remember, it's like, well, was that really 90s or like early aughts?
See, but puka shells started in the 60s.
Oh, really?
And 70s, we wore puka shells when I in the 70s. And so it only took 20 years later for them to come back. Were big bell, did big bell bottoms ever really come
yes.
back? Was that
I had some
thing?
Bell bottoms. Yeah.
Were they humongous?
They were humongous. They because were subtle.
In the 70s, I mean, I dated a guy once who tripped himself on his pants.
Because, was he okay?
Not anymore. because the bells on his pants were just so ridiculously huge. This was like 1975.
Okay, 844-967-2789. What was quintessential Wisconsin in the 90s? I'm saying Brett Favre and the Packers.
Big time.
I think that was the last time until recent memory of the Bucks being good. I think the Bucks made it to like the Eastern Conference. I think that was like late 90s. I could be remembering that wrong. Our governor was Tommy Thompson.
For several decades.
For a long time. Trying to think what else was happening in Wisconsin in the 90s.
The football was certainly the overriding. Because again, after decades of the Packers being terrible,
we were finally good.
We were finally good. And people just went crazy. I'm more interested in the fashions. Brooke, were you even alive in the 1990s?
No, I was born in 2000.
So, but you like that 70s show.
Yeah, my dad watched it a lot, so I watched it with him.
So what did you like about the show?
I just liked Donna. I wanted to be her so bad.
All right.
Like, I was like, she's so cool.
She was a pretty cool character.
Yeah.
As far as...
Is that Laura Prepon?
Yeah.
Okay.
As the tall redhead who was... Yeah, she was a cool character. That was a great show. It will be interesting to see how formulaic this one is. Because even in just watching the trailer, obviously they switched. I think it's Kate is the main character instead of Eric. So Kate's the grandchild and Eric's daughter. But the, like, if they fill the same archetype, so it's like, is there an Ashton Kutcher, like, hot dumb one, like hot dumb guy? Is there a Fez foreign exchange student? Is there the hot, bossy, like, princess that Mila Kunis played as Jackie? I think Danny Masterton's character was, like, the cool guy who ended up not being such a cool guy. For anyone who doesn't know the reference, the actor Danny Masterson has some sexual assault charges against him.
Yes.
And so he will not be
recurring love
role. He will not be a cameo on the show versus, I think, almost all of the other Topher Grace, Laura Prepon, Wilmer Valderrama, Ashton Kutcher, and Mila Kunis are all going to make guest appearances on the show.
Wow.
They're not main characters, but they're going to show up at some point in the season. And he's not.
I just find it interesting because, so they were teenagers during that 70s show, and now it's 20 years later in the 90s. Would Ashton Kutcher's character at that point have a child who is 16 years old?
You mean Eric's?
Yes.
Well, think about if, because I don't know if they put, so it, yeah, Because if you were in your late teens, in like the mid to late 70s, 20 years later, like I don't think it's, if you have a kid in your early 20s.
I guess.
Right?
Yeah, I guess. Because I just am having a hard time because Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis have two children, but they're both, I think they're under 10.
Well, it's also people, I mean, I will be almost, by the time I have a 10-year-old, you know, knock on wood, I'll be in my late 40s.
That's true.
You know, that's also true. Just decisions to life decisions of when you're going to have children. But I think reasonably, had I had a child, there's no reason I couldn't have a 16-year-old right now had I gotten pregnant at 20.
Right.
So, I don't know. Yeah.
It's not like anyone is going to care when they're watching.
No.
Show.
I mean, I think it's like the suspension of belief of you're like, well, the show's back. So, I don't know. Like, I just tried to think of, you know, sometimes when we do these Wisconsin in the Wild segments of the representation of Wisconsin and how much they get right versus how much they get wrong. And so that's why I thought it'd be fun if we kind of brainstormed and like, what would they have to include for it to be in Wisconsin versus just a 90s show that could be in anywhere?
Again, it's got to be sports centric. It's got to be football centric because it was all about Favre and the Packers. Once he stopped throwing interceptions. Actually, he never stopped throwing interceptions. So forget I said that.
That's so funny. So, like I said, my brother and my mom are in town for the night. And my husband, Michael, is very into sports cards. And my brother lamented that he couldn't. He had at one point a Brett Favre rookie card.
Wow.
And then we all joked. We're like, well, I wonder if it's lost some of its value.
A little of the glow. Maybe
it'd be interesting to see the market chart on that piece.
Yeah.
If it's still, despite the multiple controversies, but at least the latest controversy, if then is not quite as valuable as it once was.
You mean taking money from charities that was intended for poor people and using it for speeches in a volleyball court?
Not a great thing to do.
That was naughty.
I think he's trying to get out of the lawsuit, though. I think he's trying to, like, he's made some kind of request that his name get dropped from the investigation/lawsuit. I think that was the last headline I saw on this.
And it's unreal. It's just unreal.
I didn't do anything wrong. It's like, well, I mean, you did.
I knew about it, but it wasn't. Does that make it wrong?
Anyways, all right. Well, we still want to hear from you, especially if you lived, I guess even if you weren't a teenager in the 90s, but what do you remember about Wisconsin in the 90s that this show, that 90s show should or would need to include in order to really nail the show? I wonder how many people, I guess besides the actor who plays Red, I wonder how many other people work on the show who are from Wisconsin.
They did it pretty well.
The first time around.
So I know.
I'm going to watch it. Are you going to watch it? Would you watch this one?
Yeah, just out of curiosity.
Brooke, would you watch this one?
I think, yeah. Definitely.
All right. Definitely?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to watch it. For no other reason than to create more content for this show.
Things to steal.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, but let us know what was Wisconsin like in the 90s? 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Downtown Waukesha Christmas Parade is Sunday, December 4th, and WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM is proud to cover all the festivities. Parade coverage starts at 3 p.m. The coverage is brought to you by Mia's Kitchen and Pizzeria, delicious, fresh, homestyle Italian, and Planned Parenthood. Care no matter what. Affordable health care without judgment. Book your appointment today at ppwi.org. And Albanese's Roadhouse, authentic Italian family restaurant, sports bar and grill.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Finish your high school diploma for you and your family. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly sunny skies and calm this afternoon with a high of 34. Winds out of the south, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly clear tonight, lows around 27. Overcast skies tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 48. Bright sunshine expected Saturday with daytime highs approaching 26. 37 Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 28 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
So what did I miss? What did I miss? Virginia, my home sweet home, I want to give you a kiss. I've been in Paris meeting lots of different ladies. I guess I basically missed the late 80s. I traveled the wide, wide world and came back to this.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry and Jane Mettner.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Good. Nice sunshine day.
It is a nice sunshine day, but it's also the, it's funny how quickly you just get back into the motion of life. It's like, oh, this is only the fourth day I've been back since not being back for two weeks. And it just feels like, we're back into it.
And it feels like you never went anywhere, doesn't it? Already or not quite yet?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, the only thing that's just reminding me, I feel like, because it's certainly getting back into the immediate, I don't want to call it a grind, because I am very lucky to enjoy my work, both what I do here, the videos I do at Journal Sentinel, all the people I work with, like, but it is a lot of work. And the way my mind works is there's always more to do, even if no one's asking me to do it. And so how quickly you get back into the...
Is it the pace?
The pace. The pace. That's a good word. Yeah. I don't want to say the stress of it all, but the pace and the to-do list and the, I got to do this when I get home, or I got to do this weekend, and the rest and relaxation you accumulated melts away. But my tan is still here.
It is. You got to pull on those reserves. There's still a few vacation reserves you're going to be able to tap yet, I think.
Yeah. And so, but it's been fun to get back into the swing of things of picking stuff out for the show. And one of the things I feel like, not that this would be reinventing the wheel whatsoever, but sometimes we pick stories and I feel like I need to have a strong point of view on them. But then sometimes there's just good stories to know and just the headlines of things you might have missed, things that, at least in my opinion, stories you should know about. And so I think one of the things we might start trying to bake in is just like, what are the headlines? We got to think of a fun name for it, though. Because things you should know feels a little too on the nose.
Yeah, that's not very sexy.
But you can't sexy, follow up. Sexy. Can't follow up. Dr. Mike fixes your life and your lineup with things you should know.
How about sexy things you should
sexy
know?
Sexy things you should know. That sounds a little leading. People might be disappointed when they find out what the headlines are.
It might be a lie, but it might get them here.
It might get sexy things you should know today.
Yes.
This sounds like a Cosmopolitan.
It does.
10 things to please your man.
10 sexy things you should know.
And so trying to accumulate a list of, you know, stuff that happened and you should know that it happened. But one of the things I just pulled up, what I always love is the good, we were doing this a lot before the election, which is the PolitiFact, fact-checking things. And just because the election's over doesn't mean that PolitiFact isn't still fact-checking things. And one fact check that just popped up is I was like, what are the headlines? Fresh off his, I think he actually said this before he did his January 6th testimony. But Speaker Robin Voss, I guess, recently said in a November 22nd, 2022 public statement, quote, a lot of programs that were started during the pandemic are still going, even though the pandemic is long over, end quote.
It is.
Well, what do you think PolitiFact rated that?
I would say mostly false.
Ooh, ding, 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 ding. Yeah, Voss is mostly wrong on claim that pandemic unemployment payments are keeping Wisconsinites from working. Basically, for the most part, pandemic-era unemployment programs stopped paying out in 2021. Some people are still receiving pandemic unemployment payments, but those are for claims made during the time the program was open that were held up due to various issues. Because if people remember, it was a nightmare.
It was a nightmare. And unfortunately, we can blame our state legislature for not updating those computer systems before this whole thing happened, which helped create that train wreck of people waiting months and months and months to get this money.
And it's also, and I'm sure there's people who, because I remember wanting, I was trying to do a story video back in 2020 about this, because I had people contacting me even at that point with how there was Facebook groups. I mean, because it was, people were losing their houses. Yes. They were getting evicted
on
money that they were owed. But I started talking to I had a conversation with a employment lawyer and it was in Madison. I think it's Victor Garber.
That sounds about right.
You know
what
I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. And we had a conversation and he talked about kind of the historical context of not just the outdated computer system, but also the shift that happened in that entire department during the Walker era. And that really the ethos of, if you get trained to work and to process unemployment claims, that the entire kind of attitude is to treat people as they're trying to fraud the system until they prove otherwise.
Oh, so you're a cheater until you prove you're not a cheater. Or just another lazy Wisconsinite.
Yes, and that it is much more in the fabric of how the department is run, of what, you know, it was one at such a massive scale of people filing claims and the cumbersomeness of the actual process and the arbitrary reasons people would get kicked out of the process and have to start over and appeal and all of these things. But a lot of it, the man made people side of it, that it's not just the technology or lack thereof, was to treat people that they're trying to cheat the system. And I'm sure that there are people who tried to cheat the system.
And a lot of them got caught.
A lot of them got caught.
And these were some big time players who got caught.
Which ones are you referencing?
Well, there were several. I mean, there was the one guy in Florida who got caught with buying Lamborghinis.
Oh, I thought you meant in Wisconsin.
No, but there was certainly fraud. But
yeah.
I think that happened on a much different scale than people just trying to collect unemployment.
Yeah. And I mean, and a reminder to everyone that unemployment in Wisconsin is very, very low right now. We're actually at historic lows, not only just for the unemployment rate, but also for the number of people who are collecting unemployment right now. I remember looking into that when Tim Michaels made the claim of how many lazy Wisconsinites that the pandemic created, which is just not true.
No, it's not true.
All right. Well, when we come back, record year for referenda. Ari Brown from Wisconsin Policy Forum is going to be here to talk about some of the other analysis that came out of the election that has nothing to do with partisanship. All right, stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. To a political abyss. Step first into the abyss. I have my first cabinet meeting today. I guess I better think of something to say. I'm
already on my way to get to the bottom of the Shaw 101 FM. WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Kelsey Miles. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
What is dedication?
People ask, how your children learn how to ride a bike and you didn't. I just created an environment where they taught themselves and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department.
I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. President Biden has been meeting at the White House with French President Emmanuel Macron.
France is one of our strongest partners, and historically, but one of our strongest partners and our most capable allies.
The two presidents talked about the war in Ukraine.
Putin thinks that he can crush the will of all those oppose his imperial ambitions. But attacking civilian infrastructures in Ukraine, choking off energy to Europe, to drive up prices, exacerbating food crisis, that's hurting very vulnerable people, not just in Ukraine, but around the world. And he's not going to succeed.
Macron acknowledged the challenging times in Ukraine and called on the two nations to better synchronize actions on climate change. President Biden is honoring Macron with the first state dinner of his presidency tonight. I'm Ed Donahue.
Hi, this is Joe Cordell with the law firm Cordell & Cordell. Divorce can be complicated, especially if children are involved. If you're a father and want to protect your role in your children's lives, remember Cordell & Cordell. We've helped men with matters like these for 30 years, and we'd love to help you.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's Atlanta area attorneys. 404-793-0000. Online at CordellCordell.com. 1 Glen Lake Parkway Northeast, Suite 975, Atlanta, Georgia, 30328.
We tried Dynavite Nutritional Supplement, and after a couple of weeks, we noticed a big difference. Our little Gizmo's coat was shinier, and there was a lot less scratching and shedding.
My dog smelled and scratched constantly. We bathed and sprayed her, took her to the vet, but no results. Now, a little Dynavite in her food helps Bella keep her beautiful coat with no scratching or smell.
Happier, healthier with every bite. Over a million pets helped with Dynavite.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnier with your headlines. A new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum found that total debt owed by the state's cities, counties, villages, and towns rose by 5.4% to $11.04 billion in 2020, the highest amount recorded. Milwaukee, Madison, and Kenosha holding the most debt, but Wisconsin towns have seen the fastest growth in borrowing since 2015. On Wednesday, the Wisconsin Elections Commission certified the results of the November midterm elections with no fanfare. Despite false claims in the past of security over Wisconsin's elections, the election ran smoothly. WEC Chair Don Mills, a Republican appointed by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, certified the results and stated gratitude to clerks across the state for a job well done. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. It is the lunch hour. Thank you for joining us in Waukesha, Oshkosh, Rapids, Amory, Madison tonight, or, you know, Wausau on the podcast, wherever you're listening to us right now. And that song signals that it's time for Summarizing Wisconsin Policy Forum Reports, because only nerds read Wisconsin Policy Forum Reports. And today we are joined by Ari Brown, who is a senior research associate with Wisconsin Policy Forum, whose work for the forum revolves around issues of local government, finance, and data visualization. And today we're going to talk about the nerd stuff that I always love talking about, which is the thing that isn't talked about enough. And I think in the aftermath analysis that happened of the election last month, because it is December, so now we can say last month, the red wave that wasn't, the partisanship of the split ticket voters between the Evers and Ron Johnson, and the kind of a lot of the more partisan analysis of why what happened. But what also happened was a record year of voters approving to spend more money. And that is what you did a report on. So we're going to talk about that. Ari Brown, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back. And I feel like I have a little theme song now.
Have you watched, side tangent before we get started, have I sent you the actual music video for that song?
No, please do.
I need to send it to you. It's hilarious. Yeah. It's people doing their spreadsheets and all the different, I'm sure all the different software that you guys use to do the analysis that you do. And it's a genius parody song.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. I'd love to watch it.
So I guess let's get started. And so what we're kind of, lay the framework. So we talked a lot about how in Wisconsin, when it comes to changing state law, there was plenty of non-binding / advisory referenda on people's ballots. Here in Waukesha, there's one on changing election resources. There was stuff on weed. There was stuff on abortion. But, you know, I got questions from people like, what does this actually mean? I was like, well, that, whether you should vote, how you want to vote on it, because it's a popularity. It shows, like, people, like, how much people are in favor of this, but it doesn't change anything. The things that does, the referenda that were on people's ballots that does change was all the funding stuff. And there were some others that we're going to get to as well. But that other thing is the crux of what your report was on, right?
Yeah. So essentially, Wisconsin, like a lot of other states, does not have a state level binding referendum process. So we can't generally change, unless it's like a constitutional amendment. There are not things that voters can do to really change laws at the state level. What we have instead is at the local level, there are both non-binding referenda that you mentioned for things like, you know, we saw a lot for marijuana. We saw a lot for clean water. There was a question mm-hmm. that asked the right to clean water. And these are more just kind of polling survey type stuff for, you know, municipal local leaders to see where their citizens stand on certain issues. But you're right, the other kind of referendum that we have is binding referenda that are generally used to for a couple of different things. Some of them are specifically delineated in the state statutes to say, you know, in the state statutes, you're allowed to have voters vote on this specific thing, this very specific question that they can either say yes or no to, and then a very specific type of law changes. The other kind we have is funding referenda. The way that we've seen these primarily used over the last couple decades is mostly for school districts, where you have either operating or debt / capital referenda. The operating referenda would be to raise property taxes to fund ongoing operations, whereas the debt referenda would be for a specific project, usually something having to do with a new building or building renovations, things like that. What we saw a lot more of this year, though, and that we focus on quite a bit in this piece, is we saw a lot more of those same types of funding referenda happening in other local governments, so specifically municipalities, towns, and counties that have been voting to essentially voters choosing to raise their own property taxes to fund primarily what we saw this year was public safety, so mm-hmm. fire and EMS and police.
And that, because I think we talked a fair amount about the school referenda, but that was a part that I think was interesting to me as we talk about the buzzwords of defunding police and crime and stuff like that, of how many local governments at different levels were like, we need more money to pay for our services beyond schools. And so did those overwhelmingly pass? Like, we'll still, because there's basically a couple of different categories. There's what you just said as far as municipality, like services, and then we'll get to school districts and mm-hmm. the funding, how those fared. But of the ones that were specifically about services and police and emergency services, did most of those pass?
Yeah, so there were, of those municipal, town, and county funding referenda, there were 23 on the ballot in the fall, and 18 of them passed. So really high rate of success. In general, 21 of those 23, I believe, asked about specifically public safety, so either mentioned fire EMS or police. And obviously, the overwhelming majority of the ones that passed authorized more funding for those items. We talk a little bit in the piece about some of kind of the challenges around local funding right now. One of the things that you've been seeing over the last decade or so is that we have strict property tax levy limits. So the amount that municipalities can raise their property tax each year is at this thing called the rate of net new construction. Essentially, all new property created in a boundary divided by the total property value. That has lagged inflation for a little while. Shared revenue from the state has not really increased at all in the last decade either. So there's kind of an ongoing funding challenge. And then for public safety measures, you have kind of an added element here of when you had Act 10 pass in 2011, that, you know, removed a lot of collective bargaining items from most public sector employment categories, except for fire and police. And generally what we've seen is that you have unions for fire and police that are able to negotiate, you know, regular salary increases, regular benefit increases, things like that, which just kind of carries with it higher budgetary demands, which is probably why we're seeing a lot of these things kind of, you know, specified in these local referenda. And then the other item here is that obviously fire and police just account for quite a bit of the spending that happens at the local level.
And so there was, it was interesting because in this report, you should read if you don't, just between the referenda for public safety, but then also coupled with a referenda for schools, which also passed overwhelmingly, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, over the course of 2022 in its entirety, 80.1% of school district referenda passed. I believe the number was slightly lower, maybe in the high 70s, just in the fall elections. But over the entire course of the year, it was more than 4 out of every 5. This is now the third straight general or midterm election year where school district referenda have been passed at a rate of at least 80%. And that was not really something that you saw much prior to the last couple of big election cycles. And we're also seeing that coupled with a higher number of referenda on ballots to start with. We didn't have a record number of school district referenda that passed this year. There were more that were passed in 2018. There were 140 in that year, 133 this year, but still some of the highest numbers that we've seen across the 21st century. And specifically, one of the things that we call out in this report is there were more operating referenda that were passed in this year than any other year since at least 2000. So that's something that I think we're paying attention to as well.
We're talking to Ari Brown, who is a senior research associate with the Wisconsin Policy Forum, and we're talking about referenda and how much, not only the number of referenda that passed, but also the dollar amount that has now been approved. So what is that, if you have it offhand, the dollar amount that is now going to be raised between amongst the towns, cities, counties that voters voted on that they are willing to see their property taxes increased?
Yep. So in the fall, voters authorized an additional $11.4 million in municipal and county property taxes. Over the course of the entire year, it was about $23.8 million. If you look at those municipal, town, and county referenda, going back to kind of when they started, when levy limits were put in place, when you started to see this type of ballot question, and you add up all of the referenda from that first year, 2006, until last year, you had only a couple million dollars more in all of those years combined than you did in 2022. So really this year was that when we talk about a record year for referenda, I think where our head went first was the municipal, town, and county referenda.
So bear with me on this, because my takeaway as a layperson when I see this is, on the one hand, we have now what, a $6 billion surplus? Is that what it's up to now?
Yes, you know that, yeah.
We have the stories coming out as far as GOP leadership in the state legislature saying they want more tax reform, more tax cuts. And then you juxtapose that with how many voters just voted to increase their taxes to pay for this stuff. Is it a leap to say that voters are willing to pay taxes, more taxes, in order for services to get funded, and that maybe it's a little tone deaf to say that we need more tax cuts?
Yeah, so I'm going to be careful.
I know, you have to be more careful. I'm the one who gets to have an opinion.
Yeah, but I mean, we do talk in the end of this piece about, you know, we reference another report that we did a little while back called The Golden Opportunity, which talked about the state surplus. When you say $6 billion, that is $6 billion that the state has, I believe, just in its general fund to be spent on things if need be. The state can also kind of hold it as reserves. And one of the things that we talked about in that report is the state has not had these kind of reserves really in the 21st century, nothing really on the scale of this. A lot of it has to do with, you know, taxes coming in at higher levels than were projected, spending, you know, demands not necessarily taking away from that pot that is growing and growing over time. And we do kind of talk a little bit in the end of the piece about this interesting kind of juxtaposition where you have local governments that are continually and more so going to their voters and saying, we need more for this specific thing. And as we saw this year, with a very high rate of approval for municipal, town, and county referenda, with, again, high rates for school district referenda, voters seem fairly willing to approve referenda right now. And that is juxtaposed with the state having a higher level of reserves. Some of the other, right, you could obviously, you know, that begs the question, could the state use some of that revenue to alleviate some of those concerns that local governments have? I think some of the other things that we talk about at the end of this piece that have also kind of been in the general discussion around this kind of state-local relationship and local government financing, some of the questions that we've seen. We talk about local sales taxes. I know Milwaukee specifically is kind of where this is being discussed. There are no municipal level sales taxes in Wisconsin. We have a 0.5% optional county sales tax that almost every county now has instituted. And then we have the state sales tax, but that's obviously revenue that goes back to the state. Milwaukee has been talking about potentially seeing if they could get some sort of sales tax that would bring in more revenue and potentially alleviate some of those concerns. But that hasn't really been a huge statewide discussion yet. The other thing that we talk about that the forum writes about quite a bit is sharing services across like many municipal governments. We did a report very recently on the 7 North Shore Milwaukee communities, potentially looking at sharing their police department, kind of combining that into one big police department like they did with their fire department. So there are other options here, but I think one of the things that you will see around the conversation of referenda quite frequently is this kind of interesting juxtaposition where the state has growing reserves that are quite large and local governments that are having to go to their citizens and say, we want this specific thing. Can you raise your own property taxes?
And we're going to take a break. But one of the things that I think is interesting that's pointed out in the article is on the one hand, I think there's an argument of, well, it's a direct, we know where our taxes are going. And there's something appealing in that. And when you're voting on a specific referenda, but then there also is the fact that a place like Middleton, which passed a lot compared to cities that are not as growing, are not as populated, that are struggling. And is it fair to just have it be city by city? So we're going to talk more, dive into that a little bit more when we come from the break. Our guest this half hour is Ari Brown, who's a senior research associate with Wisconsin Policy Forum. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
All night to get data. We're up all night for this poster. Oh, how I hate Illustrator. Why can't I not move this figure? Next paper, we're up all night to get data. We're up all night to get data. We're up all night to get data. We're up all night to get data.
The Downtown Waukesha Christmas Parade is Sunday, December 4th, and WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM is proud to cover all the festivities. Parade coverage starts at 3 p.m. The coverage is brought to you by Mia's Kitchen and Pizzeria, delicious, fresh, homestyle Italian, and Planned Parenthood. Care no matter what. Affordable health care without judgment. Book your appointment today at ppwi.org. And Albanese's Roadhouse, authentic Italian family restaurant, sports bar and grill.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Daytime highs approaching 34 this afternoon. Under clear skies, southerly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly clear tonight. Lows level off around 27. Highs level off around 47. Tomorrow, cloudy skies. Turning cooler Saturday and Sunday with highs from the mid-20s to the upper 30s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 28 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Ari Brown, who's a senior research associate at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. And we are talking about the record number of referenda that was passed, both in quantity and in quantity of dollars, and kind of the juxtaposition that creates between the surplus that we have and what to do with that extra money, while people are also actively voting to say we are willing to pay more in property taxes to get certain things funded. And so what I thought was interesting at the end of the report that you guys produced is talking about a place like Middleton, that it was millions of new spending for their local school district, and it was like over $700,000 per year more for police and parks and priorities. But I grew up in Madison. Middleton's kind of, you know, it's right next door, and it's been growing even since I left Madison. And it's a very different community that has more money, more population, more job opportunities and stuff, compared to rural Wisconsin, other towns that do not have that kind of growth. And so I understand the argument on one side of when you don't want your tax, but you know, not knowing where your tax money goes. And so something like this feels very direct, but can you talk a little bit more about how this creates inequality or discrepancies between different towns and municipalities in Wisconsin?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is one of the other big reasons that we're focused on this issue. When you start to have this question of, you know, going to the residents of a community and saying, we want this specific thing, there are going to be places where that's easier to do and places where that's more difficult to do. When you have a very property wealthy community like Middleton, or frankly, like a lot of the suburbs of Madison, we have a map in this report that kind of shows you where a lot of the operating referenda for school districts took place. And you can see kind of a huge bunch of things happening around the Madison area. You're going to, you know, see voters in those places that are more willing to raise their property taxes because they have the financial ability to do so. And when you see something on the ballot that says, you know, we want to do, we want to raise this specific amount of new property taxes to fund, you know, an extra position in our police department, or, you know, purchase an extra fire engine, or, you know, make sure that we have a new school building that that is functional and can open up and house a bunch of new students. You know, you're more likely to see that pass in a wealthy community that has the ability to do that. And I think one of the things that you'll see, even on this map that we have in our report, is that there are large swaths of the state that don't necessarily, you know, have the wherewithal, or just, you know, aren't on that kind of referendum process like a lot of suburban communities are, that are not passing these referenda. And when you're, you know, you're making the decision at the local level rather than the state level to fund things equally, we have things like the state, the funding formula for school districts. We have shared revenue, which has some equalization built into that formula. One of the things that we use for to distribute revenue to school districts is like equalization aid is like the official name for it. We have all of these things at the state level that kind of equalize things and take into consideration, you know, the ability to pay for certain things. When you start to do things at the local level, you are going beyond those equations and just kind of leaving it up to voters. And I think that's one thing that we are definitely going to be paying attention to going forward, because there's certainly the potential for it to start to create some of those disparities. I don't think at the level of the municipal and county and town referenda, you've had enough of them to really see that play out yet. And I think school district referenda are so pervasive right now that there's not really a lot of communities that haven't passed a referendum in even the last 5 years. I believe it's something like 66, 67% of all school districts have passed at least one referendum in the last 5 years. So those disparities might not be emerging quite yet, but it's definitely something to pay attention to going forward.
And this is why the segment's called Summarizing Wisconsin Policy Forum Report, because only nerds read Wisconsin Policy Forum Reports. But I am a nerd and I find this stuff so interesting because it matters, right? And it's something that I don't think is always communicated to people who, you know, all they hear is, I don't want my taxes raised, and don't understand what services may disappear, because ultimately to get these things, there needs to be a budget for it. Whether it comes at the local level of property taxes or income taxes or sales taxes or some point, it needs to be funded. Jane, did you have a question?
I wonder, Ari, and I know this is completely speculative, but it just seems to me like with all of these communities taking it upon themselves to increase their own taxes, this just gives the state legislature more reason to say, yep, we're just going to keep sitting on our big pile of money because they're going to take care of themselves and we don't have to look like the bad guys.
I think it's going to be something interesting to look at going forward. I mean, there's certainly the potential for that. And it seems like we haven't necessarily hit a ceiling with these yet, especially when it comes to the municipal town and county funding referenda. I mean, this is the second year where those have been a thing, where we had even more than 10 of them pass. But really the first year where they've kind of been passed on a pretty wide scale. So I do think that'll be interesting to see going forward, is what kind of decisions the legislature and Governor Evers make based off of what they saw happen with referenda this year.
Well, so then with the couple minutes we have left, I do have to ask about the outcome of some of the referenda that was binding and very Wisconsin.
Yes.
How did all those ATV and UTV referenda fare? Or have you seen a lot more of them on the roads when you go up north?
So this is a question that I wasn't really aware of this previously, but we kind of wanted to look at like the wide swath of like all referenda. And there are a lot of referenda for like very specific things, but things that you might not think about. So one that we saw a lot this year was this question of essentially, should ATV and UTV, like vehicles. Be allowed on local roads. Interestingly, a lot of these were in the southern part of the state. Kind of in the like Beloit, Janesville kind of area. There were a couple in the northern part of the state, but what we saw, I think in general, we don't have full results, but a large majority of these look like they passed. Kind of lots of interesting stuff there.
Jane, we got to get you your ATV. Dangerly Jane's back.
Free the wheel. Free the wheel.
All right. Well, this is super interesting. And certainly it'll be even more interesting to see if this trend continues, because I'm sure there'll be more referenda on the spring ballot come April. And so if this is more data to look at, because you stay up all night to get data, Ari. Exactly. All right, Ari Brown, thank you so much for spending time with us. We will definitely have you back with the next report.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Love being here.
Absolutely. All right, have a great day. All right, when we come back, it is National Christmas Light Day. I actually see in Ari's background, his Christmas lights are up. Are your Christmas lights up? What is the quintessential? What do you have? What Christmas lights in your town are the best? We want to know. Take your calls, 844-967-2789. I know here it's Candy Cane Lane. Can't wait to see that. All right, stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Downtown Waukesha Christmas Parade is Sunday, December 4th, and WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM is proud to cover all the festivities. Parade coverage starts at 3 p.m. This coverage is brought to you by Waukesha Auto Repair. When your car breaks down, don't get mad. Go to war. Waukesha Auto Repair, locally owned and operated, 262-524-0000. And fully promoted. 18 years of promotional service. Whatever you want, we can get it. And Buddy's Burgers and Custard. Best burgers and custard in Waukesha.
WAUK will be broadcasting the Waukesha Christmas Parade live, and you can become a sponsor. Call us at 262-232-8164. Sponsorship includes an on-air interview during the live broadcast of the Christmas Parade. A portion of the proceeds goes directly to the Waukesha Memorial Fund. Please call at 262-232-8164. That's 262-232-8164.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.